Hey everybody, and welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of fthismovie.net. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm joined tonight for a two-part discussion, both of The Wolverine, the new Wolverine sequel, reboot, whatever, directed by James Mangold, and a discussion of their recent trip to the San Diego Comic-Con. Fresh back from SDCC, please welcome
Sandra Bullock and Alfonso Cuarón.
Please welcome Mike and Adam.
Hey, everybody.
What's up, bub?
Welcome back, you guys. I'm glad that you survived the trip to San Diego. And
so are we.
Thank you for your daily video updates. If you guys weren't watching them, you're fools. Fools, I say, and go to fthismovie.net and watch all of their videos. And while you're there, you can follow us on Twitter. We're at FThisMovie. You can like us on Facebook by going to facebook.com/FThisMovie. Or you can email us at FThisMoviePodcast@gmail.com. So like I said, we're going to be talking about San Diego Comic-Con for a little while, and then we'll get into our spoiler-free discussion of The Wolverine, followed by a spoiler-full discussion of The Wolverine. Spoiler, he has claws. Before we do all that, boys, in your time since you've been back from San Diego. Adam, have you seen anything good lately?
Yeah. I know I'm really far behind on this, but I saw the movie Heathers.
This was your first viewing of Heathers?
I've never seen Heathers before.
That's fascinating. Now, how long were you in a block of ice?
Exactly.
When did you thaw out?
I didn't even know this movie existed until it popped up on Netflix. And I was like, what's this?
Are you joking?
I'm completely serious.
What did you do with your child?
I watched Purple Rain over and over. That's what the problem was.
Got it.
To me, that's the only movie that came out of the 80s. It was Purple Rain.
So what did you think of Heathers?
It is fascinating me watching that, and also being a teacher.
Yes.
Like, this movie would never get made now.
Ew.
Like, there's no way that movie would happen.
No.
But I really liked it. I thought it was a good movie. It was a very dark comedy, which is always fun to watch because I think a lot of people get that very wrong.
Yeah, it's hard to do it right.
So, but I really liked it.
You should have seen it in 1989. Nice. It was like a revelation in 1989. It was like, holy shit, what is this movie?
By the way, I saw Heathers for the first time maybe last year, and I think Patrick at the time asked me, was I in a block of ice?
Why didn't you guys tell me this before I asked you to be on a movie podcast? Jesus.
I've seen nothing but Purple Rain and Monster Squad. That's it.
Monster Squad is all right. Yeah. I'll give you a pass. Anything besides Heathers?
I saw on
Raiders of the Lost Ark suddenly pop up on your radar.
Spoilers! I haven't watched it yet.
I also watched on your recommendation on the F This Movie website.
Yes,
I watched Hardware.
Oh, okay.
Which I'm
that was
a big,
sort of a half-hearted recommendation.
But
you gotta watch something for this day, so why not Hardware?
But
it's on Netflix.
I'm sure a lot of people and a lot of people that listen to F This Movie are fans of movies and probably have Netflix. And I'm starting to run out of movies on Netflix.
Really?
Like that, I'm kind of like,
I have like 400 something movies in my queue.
Really?
By the way, none of them are Heathers because I've seen that shit about 100 times. I have sections of Heathers memorized.
But
Miss Sherwood's Little Eskimo. Let's hope he's rubbing noses with Jesus. I love my dead gay son. I want a T-shirt that says "I love my dead gay son."
So I saw Hardware. I'm
right.
A big fan of the post-apocalyptic movie.
Yeah,
so
even the ones that take place mostly in an apartment.
Yes. Yeah.
Trust us, guys. The apocalypse is outside.
it was for what it is. It's a good movie. I liked it. If you're kind of just looking for something, you're in a sci-fi mood, it's a good one to put on.
Stacey Travis gets naked in it. I remember at the time, because that movie came out in maybe like 90, so I was 13 maybe when I saw it, and I knew that it had been cut down from an X rating for violence, and that always, way more so than like sex, I was way more interested in like, are you kidding me? There was so much violence, it got an X rating, I have to see this. And I believe it's the uncut version. At least it's out on Blu-ray. I don't know if that's what's on Netflix. It's, I don't know why that would have gotten an X rating for violence.
There's a lot worse things out there now.
Yeah, I mean, kind of the same thing with RoboCop. You watch RoboCop now, and that shit's a PG-13, like, especially this summer. Yeah, but Hardware is interesting, good.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. And then I just watched 42 today.
Okay.
Oh.
I can't really get on you. I haven't seen 42, so I can't get on you for that.
You know what? I'm just going to... So many... And this one, too. Like, sports movies get it wrong so many times.
Yeah.
Like, and this is... And, like, I understand watching the movie that... Why is... Jackie Robinson, why are they doing a movie about him? Mm-hmm. Because he broke the race barrier. So a lot of the movie revolves around that. But I feel like to truly understand it, like they go to level 100 right away with the racism and stuff like that. And yeah, it might have been that way. I don't know. I didn't.
Some of us live our lives there. Okay. Yeah.
But I don't know. I'm a baseball fan. So it's like, I want to see a little bit more baseball, not, you know, them just calling him names and things like that. So.
More baseball, less racism. In your Jackie Robinson.
That's just me personally.
You know what you could do is turn on a baseball game.
Okay, fine. God, he's such a dick.
Well, now you got me fired up with this Heather's thing. Didn't even know it existed.
I didn't even know what that movie was.
Oh, my God. So you've never heard someone say, fuck me gently with a chainsaw? And never. Say, where did you hear such poetry?
I just thought they were very creative people.
Wow. Wow, my God.
I just went to find a chainsaw.
I was like, wow, my girl's really into this.
Mike, have you seen anything good lately?
Yeah, you guys know I'm way into Shark Week. So there's this movie called Jaws? I'd never heard of it.
Okay, yeah. Yeah,
that's just pretty big.
Pretty good.
Have you been in a block of ice?
Kind of boring, I felt like.
Special, I wanted more.
A lot of talking, more shark.
Right,
yeah,
exactly.
Too much talk.
You guys are such assholes.
I just saw Heather's. I'm with you. What have I seen lately? I saw Spring Breakers.
Okay.
And if you guys want a good reviewer discussion of Spring Breakers, check out the podcast that Patrick did with his lovely wife.
Thank you.
I have such a weird relationship with that movie now. I was not a Harmony Korine fan going in. I'd seen Gummo and Julian Donkey Boy, and they just weren't for me. But I had heard that Spring Breakers is very different. I was looking forward to it, I guess. I don't want to say I was expecting to enjoy it, because I knew it's not a, you know, I assumed it wasn't a movie that...
You could masturbate to. It turns out it
is. No, I fully expected that. I don't know if it's because it's well documented on, if not on this podcast, and just amongst us, that, like, since I became a father 5.5 years ago, I just... I look at life differently, I guess. Mm-hmm. So movies affect me in different ways. And I have two little girls. And I don't know if that had anything to do with it. But it was not an easy movie for me to get through. And I realized that that's the point. I don't know why. I didn't go into it expecting to have a good time. But I also didn't expect to have such a difficult time with it.
Okay.
And I felt... spoiler, sort of, for Spring Breakers. But when Selena Gomez's character... leaves.
Okay.
I had such a huge sense of relief when that happened, which I guess, you know, the movie is working on me.
Yeah, right.
Because I felt that way. But then I felt, because I didn't feel that that same sort of tension the rest of the movie, when the movie ended, I felt somewhat disappointed. Like, okay. I had expected more.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what I expected. However, it has not left me.
Okay.
I still think about it, and I think, like, as each day passes, I like that movie more and more.
Mm-hmm.
It stuck with me.
You have a very complicated relationship with Spring Breakers.
Yeah, I do. I do.
Interesting.
I absolutely do.
If nothing else, now you know not to let your daughters go on spring break. So.
Oh, yeah.
The first couple minutes of that movie, and I don't think this is a spoiler, is basically just this slow-mo footage of, like, spring break, basically. Yeah. I don't know that it's real spring break, but it was very weird, because I think I said even on the podcast that may have been sort of like a Rorschach test, where some people may watch that and think like, oh, that looks like fun. I want to go on spring break. And I watch it and it's like a nightmare.
Absolutely,
like I can just smell alcohol and rape and it's no good.
Absolutely. I'm with you.
Yeah, that was a nightmare. Anything besides Spring Breakers?
Nothing real noteworthy. A lot of Doctor Who, which I know you don't want to talk about. Okay. Pacific Adam and I saw Pacific Rim.
Oh yeah,
which we talked about before the podcast. We both
we
both liked it. Had a lot of fun.
It's from your boy.
It is. It's from my boy.
How would you compare it to Hellboy 2? Better or worse than Hellboy 2?
Careful.
Is anything better than Hellboy 2? Probably not. But if it's anything like Hellboy 2, it will be my favorite in about a month. No, I like.
Well, you haven't canned it yet. You haven't said it's the worst.
Yeah, first you got to not like it.
To go to the extremes,
and then you'll be on board with it. All right, I'm going to rattle through. I saw four, I guess, new releases, and this never happens. Yeah. I had a busy week. So I saw Red 2.
No.
Which wasn't good, guys.
I'm shocked by that.
I know. Red 1 is fine. Like, that movie's fine. I watch it, and the first half hour is kind of good, and then I stop liking it after that point, and then I'll rewatch it, and I'll be like, surely it's better than I remember. Nope, first half hour is good, rest is bad. So I went into this, I don't know why, I thought the trailer was okay. I like enough of the cast. The guy who directed it made Galaxy Quest. There were all these reasons why I thought, like, sure, this will be different. No, it's mostly bad. The two movies that kept going through my head as I was watching it were The Whole 10 Yards and Another Stakeout. That's what it felt like. Just this sort of comedy action sequel to a movie that nobody needed a sequel to. Everyone's sort of phoning it in. It's badly made. It feels like it's 4 hours long. It's at a certain point, I just started to get embarrassed for everyone. So not a fan of Red 2. Then I saw The Way, Way Back.
Oh.
Yeah. Written and directed by Nat Faxon and Jim Rash, who won the Oscar for writing The Descendants. And it turns out Alexander Payne had a lot to do with The Descendants being very good. it's bad in all of like those indie movie ways. And I honestly didn't know anything about it because I hadn't seen any trailers for some reason. I had avoided it. But it's just about this family that goes to stay at this summer home for a summer, and this miserable kid who befriends Sam Rockwell doing like a Bill Murray impression, and
doing the Bill Murray.
No, Sam Rockwell is doing this. It at times it wants to be about real life, and then it just goes to crazy places where this doesn't resemble real life in any way. This is just your indie movie quirk, and it's not very funny. It's not the worst movie I've seen this summer, but it was pretty forgettable, and it was one of these sort of festival darlings, you know, that came out of Sundance or the other one. It wasn't at Cannes. It was at Sundance. People really liked it, and I didn't like it so much. Then I saw a movie that was even worse called The To-Do List, where Aubrey Plaza wants to fuck a bunch of people. Oh, man, is it bad?
Oh, I was kind of looking forward to that movie.
Yeah, don't. It takes a bunch of people that you like and then has them do things that are not funny at all. And it was written and directed by, I want to say, Bill Hader's wife.
Yeah.
And I think it's her first movie. And it shows because every shot is badly composed. It feels like a movie that maybe sat on a shelf for 4 years. The big joke seems to be that it's 1993. Like, that's the joke. So we get endless shots of like, and there's a Jurassic Park poster, and there's fucking Salt and Pepper on the soundtrack. But the way that she...
You've just described my bedroom, by the way.
The way that she shows 1993 is just like anything that was popular from about 84 to 93 suddenly becomes incorporated in 1993 culture, and I was watching.
So it's like
it.
The Wedding Singer without like the
kind
okay
of,
story.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, there's characters who are still doing like a kid and play thing, and like, I'm sorry, 93. No. Nirvana came along and got rid of all that shit. Like, the character that she wants to have sex with in the very first scene is at a party playing Pour Some Sugar on Me on a guitar. Like, no! That's not happening in 1993.
Right.
That's 1988, roughly, maybe 89. But, like, this guy's playing a Nirvana song or a Pearl Jam song or, like, some, whatever. This is a character eats poo. Like, it's 2013, guys. When was eating poo ever funny? But it's certainly not funny in 2013.
We did it
right?
In San Diego. It was fun.
Yeah. I didn't say it wasn't delicious. I just said it's not funny. And then the last movie I saw is Fruitvale Station, based on a true story, and it was very depressing and well done, I think. I'm having a hard time distancing myself from making the distinction between the filmmaking and the story that it's based on. So am I responding to it just because it's such a powerful, sad story?
Right.
Or is it an incredibly well-made film? Right. I don't know. And I almost, every time I want to critique something, I start to feel guilty because then I feel like I'm criticizing the tragedy and not the movie.
Right.
So I'll say, I think it's worth seeing. Your mileage may vary, but it's a sad movie and tough to get through. But of the four I just ran through, it was certainly the best one. You can skip the other three.
Okay. All right.
Also, have you guys heard of Heathers?
No.
Never heard of this movie.
Okay. How did you start liking Christian Slater? If you didn't see Heathers.
I love Cuffs.
Oh.
And he's back.
And you're back in my good graces, sir. You are right back in my good graces.
George, you know what it is? I'm going to defend myself real quick.
How?
It's one of those movies that, like, I was 10 years old when it came out.
Yeah, so was I.
My parents would not let me see it.
Oh,
so
you
kind of just passed me by.
You had to have worse parents. I watched that shit nonstop.
I'm sorry. Can I interrupt really quick?
Please do.
I thought there was something I wanted to bring up before. To go back to
you're
what
not allowed to do this.
To go back to what I've seen pretty recently.
Yeah.
Patrick is a big fan of Stargate Atlantis,
yeah.
The TV show.
Yeah.
And as well as myself.
So is Adam, and I've wanted to watch it. I was looking for, like, a new science fiction show to watch. And then my OCD took over, and I knew Stargate SG-1 took place before that. So I'm like, well, maybe I should start with that. And then I'm like, oh, I should rewatch Stargate, the movie, because I haven't seen that in forever. And that was a mistake.
That movie's a piece of shit.
It's not good. It's worse than I remembered. I think Patrick and I were talking about it, that for maybe the first half hour, I was on board. And I was like, oh, I kind of like this. And then
every time I watch it, I have that same reaction.
Right.
The first half hour is like, this is great. Stargate is going to be so fun. Oh, God. Stargate's not that fun.
I sent Patrick an email after I saw the movie. I said, all my enthusiasm for watching the show now is gone because I watched this movie, and he wrote back like, who told you to watch this? Why would you do that?
Yeah.
So yeah.
Dude, Atlantis is really good.
So you heard it here first, everyone. Stargate gets a pan. We're covering the greatest movies.
And Heathers is good. Heathers is
1994. We're all caught up. Awesome. All right, so we're going to talk about the Wolverine in a little bit, but first, let's talk a little San Diego Comic-Con. Ooh. Mike, this was your second time there. Adam, this was your third.
Yes.
And again, if you guys haven't watched the videos, go to F This Movie.
By the way, great job editing them.
Thank you. Thank you. Nice. Great job filming them and sending them, and thank you guys very much for covering that for F This Movie. But go ahead and talk about the experience a little bit. What were some of the best things that you saw? I'm fascinated. Here's a place to start. You make mention, I think, on the final video about how Mike was at the Weta booth all weekend.
Yes.
Now, the Comic-Cons that I go to, the booths, like, there's not that much to do. Yeah. You can kind of shop a little bit, but, like, clearly this is something different because I literally just picture Mike wandering around the Weta booth looking at the same shit that he's looked at every
day. And that's pretty much what it was.
So what's going on at the Weta booth besides demonstrations of, like, the
now,
lovely
do you
bones
hear, do you
want to
hear me first?
You just fucking stepped on my lovely bones joke.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Well, okay, because I want to, before he gives you, like, his... Like, I'm going to tell you what I saw from an outsider's point of view
is him wandering around.
He
longingly.
Hovers. Yeah. Like, he wants to meet people, or he wants to get something signed, or he wants to buy something.
Yeah.
And he doesn't just, he just waits around for it. The number of times, the most common phrase during the entire trip was, we'll go do that, but I got to go stop at the Weta booth for like 20 minutes. You know it's not bullshit.
Who's there that you want to meet besides Sean Astin and Evangeline Lilly?
Sean Astin wasn't even there.
He was at the profiles and history booth or whatever the fuck.
That's not a thing. What are you talking about?
It's a thing.
Oh, profiles and history? What does that mean?
It's the guys who do that TV show that was on, I think, Sci-Fi Channel, the, like, auction hunter, Hollywood auction.
You're just saying words. You know? You're literally just throwing darts.
I can't remember what that show was called. Okay. Where they would find...
So he wasn't there affiliated with
Sean
Lord of the Rings.
No, no, no.
Got it.
No. The Weta booth, on Thursday, I spent some time there. That was the first day we were there.
Friday.
Because they had a lot of... They had Richard Taylor was there.
Ah! RT?
if there is a, the way I described it to these guys was if there was, why am I saying this out loud? But if there was, you know, like
one guy that I blow,
like a Mount Rushmore for the Lord of the Rings movies, Richard Taylor would probably be on that. He's a very big deal, at least in my world. He was there
to the audience who Richard Taylor is.
He, I believe, is a co-founder of Weta. He's the, you know, the head guy. He's a major production designer, and he did a ton of work on those movies. He was
on the Mount Rushmore?
I would say Peter Jackson. I guess Tolkien.
Okay.
Right?
Sure. I don't know. Who's going on there? Hugo Weaving? Orlando Bloom?
I guess, can we go back to Heather's?
Let's go back to making fun of Heather.
I didn't put enough thought into my Mount Rushmore. Richard Taylor, but a bunch of the guys who worked on, I guess, The Hobbit specifically, some of the Lord of the Rings films, like a lot of the artists and conceptual guys, and I have like a hardcover, you know, Art of Hobbit book that I wanted to, I wanted signed. So I would go back on Thursday because they were there every day, but I wanted to.
So this is all like technical guys that you were meeting, like artists and that kind of stuff?
Yeah.
And then Evangeline Lilly.
Do they charge for autographs?
No.
Okay, I wouldn't think so. But Evangeline Lilly does.
Yes and no.
Interesting.
Evangeline Lilly, if Adam Risky is listening, I would nominate her for the Kick-Ass Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Quick Evangeline Lilly story.
There are no quick Evangeline Lilly stories.
I have a Hobbit 2 poster that I want her to sign.
Please. Along with
along with Manu Bennett, who plays Azog, however you pronounce it, the Defiler. Anyway, so I wanted her to sign it, and I knew she was there. She would sign twice a day. For the first hour, she would sign. She did a children's book. And the illustrator of the children's book was one of the illustrators who worked on The Hobbit. And then
it's a Weta exclusive.
And then later in the day, she would sign whatever the hell you wanted her to sign. And then
real steel posters?
Exactly.
Okay.
So what I thought I would do was I'd bring my Hobbit poster with, I would get the book and have her sign it, and I would just give it to my girls and then have her sign the poster as well. So I walked up to the line when she was signing her book, and I realized there was hardly anyone in line. This is like on Friday. When on Thursday, her line was huge. So I was like, oh, perfect. So I get up there. I realize I don't have the poster. But whatever. She was very nice. She signed it to my daughters, Evie and Mia, and was just very sweet. And then, so like three, I had to go back to the hotel room, get the poster. That's how much I wanted Evangeline Lilly's autograph, by the way. And then, so a few hours later, I hop back in line. And I, you know, get up there and I pull out the poster. She's like, oh, it's you again. And I said, it is. I said, but
a little spark.
Right. So I said, but this time I want to get something signed for myself. And she goes, oh, not for Evie and Mia.
What?
That was right. Like, that's, in all seriousness, I've met a lot of.
Have they met their new stepmommy?
I've met a lot of celebrities doing these things. And that was very.
They hardly ever remember your daughter's names. No matter how hard you drill them into their brains.
Anyway, so there's a lot going on at the Weta booth, and I wasn't there all.
He also got an exclusive toy there.
Yes.
It's actually a pretty kick-ass toy.
Yes. Yeah. What is it?
It's Azog the Defiler.
Of course. Did you get it signed by the dude?
No, I didn't. I thought about it, but I didn't.
Yeah.
I got my Hobbit 2 poster.
Now, what if Evangeline Lilly is like the worst thing in Hobbit 2, and now she's signed your poster?
She was so sweet and remembered my daughter's name.
That is true.
So she's fine.
All right, cool.
So we're good.
Has your love for Lord of the Rings overtaken your love for Star Wars?
It has.
Yeah,
it has.
Okay, I'm not judging. I just want to know. I want to get you on record here.
No, it has. In fact, Hollywood Heath Holland and I have discussed this.
Yeah.
Through email, that it just, when I went and saw The Hobbit, I didn't love it the way that I loved the original, you know, the Lord of the Rings trilogy. But I just, while I was sitting there, I knew what I was watching was not, you know, as good, but I just remember thinking, like, I just want to be in Middle Earth.
Yeah.
It took The Hobbit for me to realize, like, no, this is my favorite. I love the music, I love the story, I love the scope. Even when it's not great, it's still better than most things in my world.
All right.
So, no, I really love it.
Adam, what was your Weta booth?
Well, Weta booth, you know what, this is not, I'm going off movies here, right. But like, I'm an art person, so right. Like, anybody and everybody in the comic book world is there.
Yeah.
So it's like, I can get...
Liefeld?
Liefeld was there.
Was he really? Yeah, I was joking.
Yeah, he was there. Everybody was there. The only guy who wasn't there was Ryan Otley, who does Invincible, but he's been there every other year. But it's just like, and there's, it's so much easier to approach them because yeah. There's everybody...
I was going to say, are their lines like crazy long?
No.
Okay.
No. I mean, there's people, oh, you know, I had to wait. There was 5 people in line for J. Scott Campbell. J. Scott Campbell comes to Chicago... There's 25 people in line because right. He's the only name there. Right, you know, right, it's right. Like
Mike Mignola came to Chicago a couple years ago, C2E2, and the line was always huge. At least I saw for him. But the past 2 times I've gone to San Diego, I just walked right up.
Yeah,
damn,
it's a very different world
because everybody's there for celebrities.
Yeah, mostly.
Any good movie related stuff?
Well, we waited in line for a very long time to get into
Hall H
World's End and get
yeah, it. But talk about what you did see over in Hall H, right? The panel?
We did. On Thursday, it was a pretty weak day for Hall H, so we were able to just walk in a little bit before we saw the Entertainment Weekly's Visionaries panel that had 3 directors, Alfonso Cuarón, Mark Webb, and Edgar Wright.
Now, Edgar Wright is awesome.
Yeah.
He's incredible, and he was so nice and kind to all the audience members. I mean, there's a Q&A part at the end of it, and there were a lot of guys asking, like, you know, I want to get into the movie industry. Well, how would you recommend that? And like,
what a good use of a question.
Yeah, like, thank you for that. Thank you for that question. We all want to know. And Edgar Wright, like, all the guys would kind of just look like, really. And
well,
Edgar
Mark
Wright,
Webb snickered.
Yeah.
And one guy.
Yeah, Mark Webb's a douchebag.
Okay. He really came off like one.
Yeah, he might be a really nice guy in real life, but...
Weirdly enough, and Mike and I talked about this a little bit the other day on the phone, like, I don't know why, but I, like, suspected that he was a douchebag and almost want him to be a douchebag so I can feel better about not liking his Spider-Man movies. So I was actually kind of relieved to hear that he is a douchebag.
Yeah, he came off like one to us. But yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt. But
No.
Yeah, but yeah, Edgar Wright... took time with these guys to really answer their questions and give them advice. He was great. And Alfonso Cuarón was wonderful.
Awesome.
He was really good.
I'm sorry. I liked the preview for
Gravity.
But after talking to him and seeing like the passion that he really has for this movie and like the struggles he had to make this movie, it makes me very excited to see it.
Yeah.
He talked a lot about like, cause they were asking, you know, like what's the problem? Like, what you had this movie in the works for 4.5 years. Like, why have you not made it sooner than that? And he said the biggest thing was they had no way of making somebody look like they were in zero gravity for the amount of time that they needed them to be.
Okay.
In. He's like, you know, you can do the airplane thing like they did for Apollo 13 where they go up in the, I forgot what kind of like loop it is or whatever, but
okay.
You can have like 30 seconds of weightlessness. And but he's like, you know, we needed to shoot for longer than 30 seconds.
Right.
So he was like, it was an entire rig they put up. And
he said he told when he convinced whomever to make the movie, he always said, give me a year. This movie will be done in a year. And he said, it's been 4.5
wow.
years, but, yeah, he was really great. And yeah. And Edgar Wright, like you said, was great, which we expected. That's why we wanted to go.
That's the second time we've seen Edgar Wright.
Right.
Because we saw him, the last time we went for Attack the Block.
Right.
He was there for that. Yeah. And he was great there, too. Like, he's just very... He's not pretentious when he talks to fans. You
right.
know, he's very... At your level, and he understands, like, hey, you're a fan of my stuff. Thank you for being a fan of my stuff. What can
well,
I answer for you?
One of the things I like about him so much is that he's so openly a fan of other people's stuff.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, he's excited about stuff that's current, or he's excited about, you know, a lot of the same things that we're excited about. And he's so open about that, whereas a lot of directors, I think, are a little bit more closed off about, you know, I don't know what Mark Webb likes. It's obviously not Sam Raimi.
No. So somebody asked them, like, what films have inspired you or do you use? I don't remember what Mark Webb said. I remember Alfonso Cuarón said, he was like, well, you know, I use a little bit, you know, I use all movies. He gave this very generic answer. But he said, like, one of the most influential movies to him was Spielberg's Duel.
Interesting. So that
was fascinating.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that was a lot of fun. And I also wanted to say that, like, I realize on the videos we sound like we're having a terrible time. And, like, I swear we really weren't. Like, it was an amazing weekend. There's just a lot of disappointment and a lot of waiting and a lot of...
It's gotten...
There's so much you want to do and so much you want to see, and it's just impossible to do it all.
Well, I told you, Mike, before he left, he sent me just the full list of, like, the panels and stuff that were going on. And I started scrolling through, like, cool, I want to see what's there. I got about halfway through the first day, and I thought, well, this will take forever. I'm bailing on this because I was overwhelmed just looking at the options. Yeah. So I can't imagine actually
it's just being
there. And again, if there's something big that you want to get to, you have to give up a whole day, like, to sit around and wait for that thing.
Right.
My wife waited 9 hours to get into Game of Thrones and didn't get into it. Like,
yeah, I mean, she waited, like, yeah, like, I mean, that was the video we recorded where we said we wanted to get into The World's End.
Yeah.
And that was the first panel of the day. So when we didn't get into that, I bailed. Adam stuck around with his wife for a while. But
I wanted to try and get into Veronica Mars.
Game of Thrones was much later. It was hours later. And there were, you know, a couple hundred people probably in front of us. We just needed that many people to leave.
Right.
And Walking Dead was right before Game of Thrones. And apparently a ton of people left after Walking Dead, but they didn't, I don't know, they just didn't fill in.
What is with the fucking fascination with Walking Dead?
It is everywhere.
I don't get it. Yeah. I don't get it.
They had two booths. One for the TV show and one for the video game that's coming out.
Yay.
And
it's huge. Yeah. Did you have a favorite moment at the con?
I don't know. It wasn't exactly a con moment. I really loved going to see The Nerdist and that long interview they did with Matt Smith, who, you know, we're all Doctor Who fans here, and, you know, just when he started, Doctor Who wasn't very big, and it's huge now.
Yeah.
They capped the line for the Doctor Who panel on Sunday at 1 a.m. in the morning on Sunday. Like, that's how soon you had to get there. He wasn't on until 12:30. Like,
so he was on 12:30 Sunday afternoon. They capped it at 1 a.m., like, just after midnight on Saturday.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's
just like...
See, that's out of control. That that kind of thing makes me feel like, oh, I would never want to go, because why even try?
Well, I did. I walked away from this con saying, if I ever go back, I'm getting out of my head that I'm going to go to a panel.
Right.
If it works out the way that the Thursday panel, with that,
right.
If it works out like that, awesome. But I'm, you know, I don't know if it's I'm just too old or what, but I'm not doing that. Like, I don't, you know, I had in my head maybe I would camp out, but I don't think I'm going to.
Well, I don't even totally get it, because all the news that breaks is online within 2 hours.
It's all about...
You might see some, like, exclusive footage, but so what? You're in the room with the person, and I just don't have the thing where, like, I want to be in the room with the person. But
I do think there's this weird, and I guess I'm guessing, but there's just this weird energy that takes place. Like, specifically Marvel seems to know what they're doing with their panels. And they just, people just go crazy.
And it's not just that, like, I think you saw the footage on the first day of the Psych musical line. And there's this weird party atmosphere where it's like there's these people that, like, hey, back in my hometown, I'm the only person I know who likes Psych.
Sure.
You know, and now I'm here.
Right.
And there is thousands of other Psych diehard fans. I want to spend the next 10 hours hanging out with them.
Yeah.
Like, and there's people who like that, you know? They just want
that's
that.
That's part of the Comic-Con culture. Like, yeah. Absolutely. People like camping out.
Right.
I discovered all this before. Like, Adam and I went together in 2011. And, you know, we did so much and had a great time. But it wasn't until after we left, actually until pretty recently, that I realized how much was going on that we missed.
Mm-hmm.
Because I just would go to Comic-Con's website to find everything out.
Sure.
I didn't know about Nerd HQ, which is its own other little, like, convention.
It's like a spin-off convention, right?
Right. And, like, all these different, you know, parties and shows and stuff. I had no idea.
We had the Sons of Anarchy party, like, on our rooftop of our hotel, that on the FX party. It was,
yeah.
Like,
it's just, it's crazy and it's overwhelming, but it's awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, the highlight was, and again, I always managed to bring up Doctor Who whenever I'm on this podcast, I think, but, I ran into Stephen Moffat, the showrunner of Doctor Who, just on the floor. Like, that's awesome. That's not going to happen anywhere else for me.
Right.
the great.
So, like, you know, but moments like that. When we were there a couple years ago, we ran into Werner Herzog on the floor. I don't even know why he was there. But again, like,
he's a huge comic book fan.
Taking pictures with my wife.
Yeah, he's like, this is my wife.
He loves Psych. Which I
Well, it's like, what's great about the con is it takes your fame level down. You know, like you come to some place, you come to the Baltimore Comic Con, you know, and you're some B-list celebrity. You're treated like royalty there. You know,
right.
You come here, like John Barrowman, who he came to C2E2, a huge line. He was one of the biggest names there.
Right.
You know, everybody was there to see him. He's like sitting at a booth with like maybe four people in line at some points during the game.
Right.
Like nobody's there to see him because Tom Cruise is walking around,
right.
You know?
Right.
So,
yeah.
But the other thing, and I touched on it, the thing that's really, it's bothering me too, is the toy thing, like the exclusives, is really starting to come to a tipping point, I think, with the conventions. Because when I went 3 years ago with my friend Rob for the first time, like, we had phone calls from our friends back here, like, hey, dude, can you pick this up for me? And, like, I just walked up and got it. And
right.
It wasn't a problem.
Right.
Well, what's happening now is they realize that, especially with things like eBay and things like that, there's a really big, there's a market, a big market for the toys after you go there and buy them. So there's guys, hey, I own a comic book store in New York. I'm going to send three guys there and I will pay for your trip and everything. You just need to get X, Y, and Z for me.
Right.
And get three copies of it or whatever and send it back to me. That if you watch the last day's video, there's a moment where I'm waiting in line to get a Lego figure, and I'm like, "This is pathetic! I can't believe I'm waiting in line for this." So I get the Lego figure.
Oh, you got it!
I did. I got the Lego figure.
That should have been on the video. That
yes.
Has a happy ending.
Yes.
So you guys had to listen to the podcast to find out how that cliffhanger resolved.
So I got the Lego figure. And
what's the Lego figure?
It's of Green Arrow. Yeah. And
can you return it?
Well, just wait for the story.
Oh, sorry.
So I get the figure and I go up and I get it from the booth. You just go up to a Lego booth. I thought you had to pay for it. It was free. They just gave it to you.
Crazy.
Yeah. And it's just a little tiny Lego minifigure. And it says it's in a card, like a plastic bubble card. And it says San Diego Comic-Con on it. Exclusive, you know? So I get it. Now, stepping back a little ways, the Lego got shut down the first day, like, because that happened a lot with a lot of booths. Like,
yeah,
they would
mean?
Shut down booths because their crowds were crazy.
Were so
crazy. Out of town.
Yeah.
Like, what can you remember any other booths that got
Funko?
Shut down?
Funko booth?
What is Funko?
They make,
you know those movie bobblehead dolls?
Yes.
Yeah. Certainly, yeah.
That's what they're known for, and they had exclusives.
What is wrong with people in San Diego? Like, who cares about those? Why?
It piggybacks on that a little bit. When I was in one of the lines I was in to meet someone.
Can you be more specific?
David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson.
Uh-huh,
you get that put up for that?
Yeah, no. Well, we can spend some time on it, sure.
That's fine. I was against the wall, because that's where they start putting people in the lines are too big, like in front of a booth or something.
Yeah.
So across from us, also, you know, against the wall is this other gigantic line. So we asked the people in that line, what are you in line for?
Most common phrase uttered at Comic-Con is, what is this line
what
for?
What is this line for?
everybody will say it at least once.
So we said, what are you in line for? And they said, the BBC America booth.
Okay.
We said, the booth, like, to shop?
Right.
They said, yes.
Just to get in to the BBC America booth.
Now, the BBC America booth this year designed, because that was my Weta booth 2 years ago. That's where I was constantly. But they designed it so you can't just walk up to the booth. You have to get into a line.
Okay.
But the line was so fucking huge that they moved it like halfway across the con onto a wall. It was gigantic. People had to come over to grab and say, like, okay, we can take five people. That's
here.
How crazy. All right, I'm sorry.
And is that just people trying to buy, like, Downton Abbey action figures?
Right,
mostly
exactly.
Doctor Who stuff.
I figured, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they're smart. I mean, not smart, but even at the Chicago Con, like, last year we went and I was trying to find some Doctor Who toys, and there was only one place you could get them. Like, there was one place that was allowed to sell them, and nobody else had them, I thought.
Yeah.
Oh boy. So back to Lego.
So Lego, the first day, they get shut down because so many people, I don't think they thought this many people were going to come to get a raffle ticket.
Right.
So, and then there's guys who got sent out there, there's collectors, there's also guys who have to meet their quota that's like, well shit, if it's a raffle, I need to get as many tickets as possible.
Right.
So they go back through the line over and over.
It's a fun existence.
Yeah, exactly. So that happened every day.
Guys, really, we had fun.
Yeah, it's fun. So Saturday, me and my wife got in line to get the Superman. There was a black suit Superman one. And there was literally guys that you would see them grab the ticket and go in the back of the line. And the line itself was 1,000 people deep. Now, it's a raffle ticket line. You just grab a ticket. It moves very, very quickly.
Right.
So I didn't know this at the time, but on Sunday when I was going through for the Green Arrow action figure, they were scanning everybody's badges.
Okay.
And so they would only let you go through once. So a lot of the collectors didn't get to go through.
Oh, that's hilarious.
I picked up the Green Arrow. I turned around and this guy goes, I'll give you 50 for it.
Wow.
And I was like, and then the guy right next to him goes, I'll give you 150 for it. And the next guy goes, 200. And in my head, being a collector for all these years, I'm like, these guys know something I don't know.
Right.
So I'm like, no, I'm sorry, guys. I'm just going to go home. So I go home. Bug, text me. Mike, I'm sorry.
I'm at the Weta booth. Where are you at?
Yeah, right.
What's this line for?
I'm just going to say, what's this line for? I was just going to say for $200 what I could do at the Weta booth. Damn it.
I could buy so many Evangeline Lilly's children's books.
So,
porcelain Hobbit hole.
So he texts me. He's like, you might want to go on eBay right now and check out your Green Arrow action figure. It's at $500.
Holy shit.
You got it for free.
I got it for free. So I get on there right away. There's only one guy who's like got it on there right now.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm going to try and get in right away. So I go
in. So you bought it.
Yeah, right? So I post mine
Thanks
right
for the
away.
Heads up, dude. Yeah.
I got this.
Lucas got two.
So I
It's not what I meant.
I go on there and I post it. Within an hour, I posted it at $300. Within an hour, it was up to $400. I was getting like just private messages on eBay from everybody, and as this is happening, more people are starting to put it on.
Yeah,
there.
Right,
and I'm
right,
like,
right.
I'm like, it's getting less rare.
Yeah.
So this guy, he sends me messages like, I'll give you $575 for it. So I sold it for $575.
So what I'm saying is I'm part of the problem.
Yeah. Right? I didn't even know it. I just wanted the figure, but it's like,
I know, but as you started
paid
that
for
story,
your trip. Yeah, right.
Right. Yeah, right.
You're the asshole you were complaining about.
As you started that story, I'm like, I know how this ends.
But I
know, I'm just
I wasn't there like, I mean, the Mattel booth was ridiculous.
Yeah.
The Hasbro when we were going up for that line to meet the How I Met Your Mother people,
yeah.
It was huge. There were like all those like little cattle like rings or what did you go in? Whatever.
Cattle rings, yeah. No, that's a famous that's an expression that people say.
Anyway. So there was all those and I just remember looking over and there was one bigger. And there was like, this line for Hasbro, this line for Hasbro. Like,
what does Hasbro have that people
they
are excited
had,
about?
They had the
Star Wars stuff.
Okay.
But they, no, the
was
big,
it exclusive stuff or just Star Wars stuff
yeah,
in general?
Exclusive
okay.
stuff. The Boba Fett, the six inch Boba Fett, the gem character.
And people wanted that?
Yes. It sold out day one.
I mean, they could just make anything an exclusive, and they would get. They should just start taking inventory of like shit that didn't work out.
Yeah,
and start making them Comic-Con exclusive. Like, we got a warehouse full of fucking battle beasts.
Yeah,
it's an exclusive. Yeah, shit,
all right,
they're all gone.
And then the big one though was the Transformers Megaplex.
Sure,
it's a giant city. But then, like, you look at it, too,
it transforms into a smaller city.
Yeah, right. City to robot. But there was just, you'll go to booths. I guess San Diego's cracking down on it. But, like, you'll go to a booth, like, oh, the Megaplex is here for $160. And then you go down three booths, and there's some dude who has the Megaplex there for $400.
So they don't want you buying something as an exclusive and then selling it at your booth
yes.
at the same
convention?
There's
no way to stop.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of bullshit. Like, once it's yours, you can do what you want with it,
I
right?
know. They're just not happy about it, I guess.
Well, wah.
Yeah. If I could just, one thing, like, just an example of how bizarre, at least to me, how bizarre people can be at Comic-Con, and I realize I just talked for 20 minutes about Evangeline Lilly, but there's this one guy.
We're just full of hypocrisy right here. Yeah.
Not me, I didn't go.
But I was in line for, Duncan Jones did a surprise signing, so it was a pretty good line for Duncan Jones, and everyone, I would figure if you want to meet him, you're a fan of his work, you know who he is. There was a guy behind me who was freaking out because he was in line for Duncan Jones, but didn't know how he was going to meet Duncan Jones and the director of Sharknado. And I was like, how are you the same? Does that make sense? Like,
yeah,
it fascinates me that you want to meet the guy who did Moon. You keep talking to me about how great Moon is, but he was freaking out with his wife. Right. He was freaking, like, his wife came over and he was trying to figure out, like, maybe his wife can wait in the Duncan Jones line so he can run in the Sharknado line. It was just...
This Sharknado bullshit needs to put a stop. Like, a couple weeks ago, I wrote that thing about snakes on a plane, and I just complained about, like, irony imploding in on itself. And then to prove me wrong, society invented Sharknado, and it's everything that snakes on a plane sort of wasn't, you know?
Yeah.
In terms of its popularity.
As much as, like, the San Diego Con, like, is stress, I just realized how much fun we were having, though, when, like, I'd go and check my Facebook updates, and everybody would be like, Sharknado is awesome! And I'd be like, that's what you're doing back at home, is you're watching Sharknado.
Yeah.
Like,
You were playing with Legos, so you are the winner. How were David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson?
Gillian Anderson was very nice, and not that David Duchovny was not, but he... They were trying to move people. They're trying to move people along.
Yeah.
So he would just sort of sign, say hi.
He didn't try and have sex with you.
He did not.
That's a problem.
He did not.
Did Gillian Anderson know your kids' names?
She did not know.
You gotta stop
watching X Files.
I didn't go, but the X Files panels popped up on a lot of like Comic Con worst lists.
Interesting.
Which is interesting. I watched it online, and I think. People, I don't know, you know, it's a 20-year reunion panel, and they I guess, never really do conventions, so people had a lot of high expectations, and it was fine. I think, like, with panels, it totally depends on the personalities up on stage, too.
Right.
And Chris Carter is not, he just looked like a deer in headlights.
Yeah.
He looked completely uncomfortable. David Duchovny, he's just, I don't know, laid back.
Did you tell David Duchovny that I'm a huge fan of Playing God? Because for the record, I am a huge fan of Playing God, a movie that no one remembers, and I really like.
I didn't remember until you said it.
Yeah. I'm a fan. You should revisit it, because it's good.
It's okay. The X-Files panel.
You can see the grin, Patrick.
I'm being totally serious, though.
No,
are you a fan of the second X-Files movie?
I am.
Me, too. That one gets so much shit.
I like that one actually better than the first one.
Yeah. Me, too. I don't really care for the first one, but I actually really like the second one.
Yeah.
I'm with you. It was just a weird... a weird panel. Like, if you watch the Doctor Who panel, people will ask... questions of, like, you know,
how do I get into the film industry? What's this line for?
that Stephen Moffat can't answer, but he does it in such a way, either with, it deflects either with humor or
he's British, he has that talent,
right? Exactly. We're like, somebody, people would ask, especially the moderator in the X-Files panel would ask Chris Carter, like, what's up with X-Files? And it was so his responses were always so uncomfortable, and it was a weird panel. I guess I understand why. Like, I'd be bummed out if I camped out to go to that panel, but...
You get the dredges of, like, the geek society at some of these. Like, that could not be summed up more than... not to talk about another podcast here, but we went to go see the filming of The Nerdist.
Yeah.
And they had a, they had, like, a question and answer thing, and Matt Smith was up there and just taking questions, and there was this guy who got up... who, like, asked, I was thinking about something, it was, like, him in the spacesuit from one of the episodes, and you take off the helmet, and it's you as the Green Ranger mixed with a Triceratops. And, like, everybody's like, what?
Yeah, right.
And Matt Smith was totally handled it great. He's like...
They all did.
Yeah.
The Nerdist guys were... Because a lot of those questions in that Q&A were brutal.
Embarrassing.
Like, yeah, exactly. But they, like, between Chris Hardwick and Matt Smith, they handled it wonderfully.
Real quick. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, the last story that I want you to say, dude, I love the story with the Troma booth.
Oh, let's hear this.
Yeah, I don't. Maybe this is just me, and maybe no one else will be wigged out by it. But I've never actually met Lloyd Kaufman, and I knew he was going to be there. So I dragged my friend Nancy to his booth, and I said, "Lloyd, do you mind if I get a picture with you?" He said, "Sure." So Nancy grabs my phone to take the picture. He's like, "Oh no, that beautiful lady should be in the picture too." So I was like, "Okay." So he's like, "You know, Bill or whatever. Why don't you take a picture of us?" So he grabs Nancy and puts Nancy between myself and him. And Nancy goes, "Well, wait, no, why don't you go in the middle, because he wants a picture."
Right.
He was like, no, we're fine just like this. So so the guy took the picture, and he wouldn't stop patting Nancy and like just rubbing her shoulder and rubbing her back, and wow. The whole thing was really weird and uncomfortable. And I realized this is Lloyd Kaufman. It's sort of his, I don't know, part of his character. He sort of plays a creepy, uncomfortable guy sometimes,
right.
But he really, I don't know that it's
so Nancy hooked up with Lloyd Kaufman.
Yeah, exactly.
And you hooked up with E. Lilly.
Yeah, right.
That's kind of fun. And you got that Lego thing going.
Yeah,
so
I
that's pretty
to a Lego.
Cool. Yeah, I know. Who among us hasn't? You know what I'm saying? Well, awesome. Thank you guys for, again, for all your coverage of San Diego Comic-Con, and I think everybody really liked watching all the videos. And
by the way, heading into this podcast, I knew we were going to talk about San Diego Comic-Con. I felt sort of bad about the videos, again, because I felt like we didn't portray them.
Like, I'll set the record straight.
Wait a second. Now I almost started every bit of this up. I don't want any of this on the podcast.
If somebody said to me, like, dude,
this is horrible.
The worst part about San Diego Comic-Con is getting the tickets and getting a hotel room.
Yeah.
If somebody was like, dude, here's tickets.
Yeah, right.
Here's home. You just have to pay for them. I'd be like, okay, I'll
be
go
like,
back.
Fine, I'll go sell another fucking Green Arrow Lego.
Yeah, right. I'll go hang out. It's fine. But it's just
The whole thing is stressful. You know, just you guys telling me the stories about getting the tickets and stuff stresses me out. So I can't even imagine actually going out there. But I have some anxiety issues. Let's talk about the Wolverine, guys.
Please.
Now that we've talked about San Diego Comic Con for a while. Let's talk about the Wolverine, which I was about to say, like, I think it's the last comic book movie of the summer, but we still have Kick-Ass 2.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I feel like there might be one more. But sort of the last big superhero movie, I guess. We had Iron Man 3 to kick off the summer. We had Man of Steel as the shit in the middle of a sandwich. And now we have the Wolverine. And like I said at the top of the podcast, we're going to talk spoiler-free for a little while, and then at the end we'll spoil things if you've made it this far. I'll start with you, Mike, because I don't know what you thought of the Wolverine. What was your reaction to the Wolverine?
Well, going into the Wolverine, I was not looking forward to it whatsoever. The marketing did not do this movie justice at all. I've never been so just down the middle, I think, with a superhero movie. Because I still, even with all the superhero movies out there, and all the shitty ones, I can't help it. I fully admit it. When I know a superhero movie is coming out, I look forward to it. I always find a way to see it. But with this one, and I like Wolverine as a character, but with this one, I just was not looking forward to it really at all. I will say I liked it a lot. I didn't love it, and to be honest, I haven't given much thought to it.
Yeah.
As I guess I'd hope, but while it was in front of me, I enjoyed myself more so than I thought I would. Is it a movie that I will revisit over and over again, like I have other superhero movies? I don't know.
No,
maybe not. But overall, I liked it much better than I had anticipated.
All right, Adam.
Well, you know how I feel about it. We went to go see it on Friday. I really liked it. I thought it was. I had the same thing. I think that everybody going into it, I was like, "Oh, this is going to be shit." Because I'm thinking X-Men Origins in my head, which is one of the, if you listen to our superhero podcast, it was ranked one of the worst superhero movies of all time.
Yeah.
And just to completely just see this great story, like, it was just very entertaining. There was some, I always love a movie where there's something that I haven't seen before.
Yeah.
And not that, I don't think this is a spoiler, but like, not that I've never seen a fight on the roof of a train before, but I've never seen a
That's
fight
great.
Like that on the roof of a train before, the bullet train. Like, that was that's the scene I point to as being like, wow, that was really fun.
That was sort of the big set piece of the movie, and it's in all the marketing, so it's certainly not a spoiler, but when they would show it as part of the marketing, I would, like, roll my eyes because I thought it looked so stupid, but I, like you, thought that was probably the best scene, that was the best sequence in the movie.
I agree with you guys.
I'm definitely on the same page. Like, this was the one that I found myself dreading a little bit. Like, I'm going to have to see it, A, because it's sort of this week's big movie, which is how I thought about it more than I did, like, the new Marvel movie or the new comic book movie or whatever. I was just like, well, this is the big release of this week. I thought the marketing was bad, so I was not looking forward to it, and maybe it's just a little bit of burnout on superhero movies. Maybe it's just that X-Men Origins Wolverine did leave such a bad taste in my mouth, which, by the way, can we just stop for 1 second? They called that movie X-Men Origins Wolverine. Like, I feel like we've all just passively accepted that now as a society, but we need to go back and be really upset about the fact that they released a movie called X-Men Origins Wolverine.
That would indicate that there was going to be more X-Men Origin movies.
Which, that was the plan. The next one they were going to do was a Magneto. And then I think they kind of just turned everything into First Class, and First Class covered so much of it. And I, like you, was surprised. I liked the movie a lot. I have some problems with it, and we'll talk about those maybe more in spoilers. But I thought it was for the most part, really well done. And James Mangold is a director that I'm a fan of, but when I heard that he was directing this, because originally it was supposed to be Darren Aronofsky, and I kind of know what that's going to look like, and I'm interested in that. Yeah. And then he leaves, and they replace him with James Mangold, a director who doesn't really have a signature style. His whole thing is that he makes movies in every genre, which is interesting. So I didn't have high hopes, but I think he really did try to make a movie that is way more about the character of Wolverine than anything we've seen before, and tries to be true to the character. It's way more about character than it is plot, and we've seen a lot of comic book movies in the past couple of years be so much about plot, or even something like Star Trek Into Darkness, which is just like entirely about plot and not about character. And so it was nice to see a movie that, for the most part, just focused on character, sometimes to the detriment of the movie, because if you really try and think about what the plot of this movie is, it's not great. It's a little thin. There's a few too many characters. Not all of them are great. You know, the Archer character.
Yeah.
I'm not real sure what he's doing in the movie. You know, I don't know if he has a place. I've heard a lot of, I will say, I got home from the movie and I had all these things that I wanted to say about it, and then I read a review that unfortunately hit on a lot of the things that I wanted to talk about. So, and I try and be very conscious of not aping other people's reviews, but two of the things that I wanted to point out were that the last act is a problem.
Yes.
And that it reminded me a lot of a James Bond movie, and somebody else pointed to that, and I thought, oh, God damn it, I thought I was going to be original on that. But and not just because of the last act, which is very Bond-esque, absolutely, but even the sort of the girl relationships, if you point to, well, there's this one and this one and this one. Interesting that it shit-cans X-Men Origins Wolverine entirely.
Yeah.
Basically just a sequel to X-Men The Last Stand, which, yeah, good, finally, you know, and they try and get the character of Wolverine back in a place to where they can obviously continue with the franchise.
I'm going to ask you a question. I read a lot beforehand, and in fact, I think that there was like a flagged article, like when you log into Yahoo, like it comes up and it said awkward scenes.
Wait, who logs into Yahoo?
I do. Real
okay. Right. Cool. Is that where you found out about Heather?
Yes. Okay.
I was trying to figure out how to weave a Heather's joke in.
I'm not
that
like
came out with it.
I don't find like a clever, nuanced way. I'm just like, yeah, and also Heather's.
But it's like awkward scenes in it. And I read the article, and it was basically about how the scenes with Jean Grey were very awkward and weird. And I, like, watching it, I was like, I really actually kind of liked those scenes, because it really showed, like, here's Wolverine's having a really tough time dealing with what he had to do at the end of the, you know, previous movie.
Right.
So it's like, you know, I loved that she was there and she was like kind of haunting him through this entire movie. And I thought it was great. And the way they deal with her at the end, like, I'm not going to say anything, but the way they deal with her at the end of it, I thought was great.
I thought it worked. I don't have a problem with that. I think, you know, some people are put off by the fact that she's always in bed because that's when he talks to her, and that she's always wearing some sort of like nightgown that's a little bit cleavagey. My thought, and I think I said this to you after we saw it during a lot of those scenes, was when they made X-Men back in like 2000, there were comic book movies were basically untested for a little while because Batman and Robin had come out a few years earlier and kind of destroyed everything. So the approach that they were taking, where they sort of take things seriously and it's this Marvel property that they've never made a movie out of, it was sort of untested. And now they get Academy Award winning actors to star in these fucking movies. And back then they couldn't. So they kind of had a price, and here's who we could get for the money. So the big stars of X-Men are, you know, really Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen, because everybody else is like Anna Paquin pre-True Blood and James Marsden, who nobody knows, and Hugh Jackman, totally unknown, and Famke Janssen as Jean Grey. And I mean, I understand they're tied into a continuity now, but I was watching those scenes, and Famke Janssen is fine, but she's not who would spring to mind. If you said cast Jean Grey in a movie, having read X-Men, that's not who comes to mind, so it's interesting.
Evangeline Lilly, that's who I
think. Of course, writes all the children's books. so, watching those scenes, I just kept thinking about, boy, if they had to recast Jean Grey today, it would not be Famke Janssen, so it was interesting to see them tied into this actor for this part.
Yeah, listen.
That, to me, it's a little bit out of her league. Not that what she has to do in this movie is outside of her abilities, but it's just, she's a very important character, and to see how much of it rests on the shoulders of Famke Janssen is weird to me, because 2000 was a very different time than we're in now.
Would it be weird to you, I associate her with that role. I just feel like now it'd be weird to me if...
Oh, I don't want them to recast it, because I'm a crazy person for that. Like, no, stick with it. And I'm glad that they are, and they sort of are on this one continuity. I know when Darren Aronofsky was going to do the movie, it was going to be more of like a prequel story. And so I thought it was interesting that this is more about what happens between Last Stand and Days of Future Past.
I think this is great.
Yeah, I mean, it works as just sort of a solo Wolverine adventure that still sort of ties into the continuity.
Can I ask you guys a question? Because I haven't read it in years, so I don't remember. This is based on, or loosely based on, the John Byrne, Frank Miller?
Frank Miller did the art,
Did Byrne write it?
I thought Chris Claremont was on it, too.
Yeah, you're right, it's Chris Claremont. Okay. You're absolutely right.
So how true to that story was this?
I've never read it.
Oh, okay.
It's been a very long time since I've
not read it.
It's been a very long time since I've read it too.
I'm glad I brought it up.
Yeah, thank you for this entire thing just came to a screeching halt. Thank you.
Sorry, I was thinking that was watching because I thought I'm sorry, what's her name?
She's in it. Like, she's in that
book. But isn't she? I don't want to get into it. Okay,
we'll get into spoilers pretty soon, guys. I like the movie. Two things I want to talk about. One is that this may be premature, because I liked Iron Man 3. I definitely liked this better than Man of Steel. I might have liked this better than Iron Man 3.
I liked Iron Man 3 more than you did.
Yeah.
I like Iron Man 3 better.
Yeah. But not that we have to compare them. But again, this summer is just so fucking backwards, because everything that I'm sort of excited about has disappointed me, and anything that I'm like, I end up liking a lot. You know, I like the Wolverine a lot. I liked the Monsters University and like stuff I didn't expect to like, and Star Trek and Man of Steel and even Pacific Rim to an extent have all let me down. Right. And this movie surprised. And again, maybe it's just about expectations, where I expected the worst and it wasn't the worst, so I liked it.
No, this movie was, like, I think even if I had been excited for this movie, it held up. I liked it.
Yeah.
It's funny. I was thinking about it. Right now, I was just looking at James Mangold's filmography. And I think, you know, I said earlier that I don't know that I'm going to rush to rewatch The Wolverine. And I'm sure I will. But, like, looking at his filmography, I think I've seen, I like him. He's fine. But I feel like I've seen his movies once.
Yeah.
And that's it. Maybe he just
makes those,
like,
kinds of movies. Right. Yeah. They're fine and not always rewatchable. I feel like had he stuck the landing to this movie a little bit better, I'd be going back to it a lot more.
No,
the first two thirds I really, really like.
Right.
And I like the way he handles it. And it's interesting to see a movie like this that's sort of about dialogue and character moments instead of just crazy action. It reminded me, you know, there are scenes we keep wanting this great Wolverine movie. And we got some of that in, not The Last Stand, X2, that attack on the school.
That's awesome.
Right, exactly. It's the best scene in the movie, and we finally get to see Wolverine cut loose.
One of the best scenes in the comic book movies, yeah. I would say.
So it's great to see him, a full movie of him cutting loose in that way. And I was reminded of, you know, it's been a long time since I've seen the first X-Men. And that movie gets a lot of things right. It has a lot of problems, a lot of them budgetary and stuff, but one of the things it gets so right is the way that Wolverine is introduced, where he's just in that cage fight.
Yeah, right.
And, I mean, Hugh Jackman, to me, like, becomes a movie star just in that shot. I mean, the way he is behind that cage
right.
is so great. And this movie, I felt like, got back to some of that. The thing I was going to say, though, where we talk about, it's great to see Wolverine do his berserker attacks for an entire movie. Here's another movie this summer that is rated PG-13 because it costs a bunch of money and it's released by Fox and it's this popular comic book property and Hugh Jackman's a big movie star. This is an R movie. This movie is wall-to-wall murder. Like, and right. a lot of it being done by Wolverine. Yeah, and again, right. as fans of the character, we're like, yeah, that's what he does. He yeah. does kill people. But you have a movie where your hero is just slaughtering people left and right and it's PG-13. It's totally fine.
By the way, if he didn't say fuck it, yeah, I wonder if they would struggle with even.
Yeah, like, right.
Maybe it's
right.
PG.
Yeah. Which, yeah, he does get to drop.
By the
one
way,
yeah,
I mentioned this to Patrick. Who, like, I kind of was like, oh, he doesn't swear. I mean, but it's kind of like it's got a comic feel to it because right. he doesn't swear in the comic. But right. like, they used when he eventually drops the F-bomb. Like, that was awesome. Yeah. You know, like it because it's not used yeah. the entire movie.
He does it in X-Men First Class, right?
That's his only line.
Right.
Yeah.
But it says fucking that too.
It's just like, fuck off. Yeah. Right. Which I actually wasn't crazy about that beat in X-Men First Class. And maybe I'm going to change my mind now that they're doing, because my problem with that was I thought they were trying to establish like a new continuity. And by tying it in as Hugh Jackman, now you're tied into the same continuity. But obviously they're making an entire yes. movie to address that now. Exactly. So
yeah.
maybe I'll turn around on it once Days of Future Past comes out. This movie opened to about $55 million this weekend, which to me is like, that's great. I could buy so many Green Arrow Lego figures for that. But it's like the lowest opening.
Can we make
opening.
One of him for a while?
Oh, give him a second.
It's like the lowest opening of like any of any X-Men movie. Even the first movie back in 2000 opened to like 54.
Why is that?
X-Men Origins Wolverine opened crazy big. X-Men The Last Stand set a record at the time. It was like $120, $130 million. I think part of it is people are a little bit burned out on superhero movies, and I think X-Men Origins Wolverine shit the bed so badly that I think people stayed away. I hope that this is the kind of movie that word of mouth helps keep it yeah. afloat for a little bit longer. I know it did huge business overseas, which is where movies make their money now anyway. They don't make it in America anymore.
But we also opened this review by saying, for all three of us, we were not blown
yeah,
away by the marketing.
Right.
So I think that's probably an issue as
they
well.
They have kind of an uphill battle. And like I said, yeah. hopefully word of mouth gets out. Because I do think people should see it. If you're
a fan of just movies, it's a...
Yeah.
yeah
I think most of it is a really good movie. And with that, let's get into spoilers so we can talk a little bit more specifically. If you've not yet seen The Wolverine or don't want it spoiled, tune out and we will continue to discuss The Wolverine.
Go see it, though.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Yep.
All right, so, Mike, your problems.
My problems would probably be the last act
yeah.
I didn't love, like, when we start getting into... What was that woman's name? Is she the Viper? Is she
Viper? I believe that's right.
No
yeah,
idea.
That whole
garbage villain.
Right.
Garbage villain.
Awful.
Huge
right.
problem for the movie.
Right.
Why they couldn't have just gone with Army of Ninjas. There doesn't need to be, like, a big bad guy. There doesn't even need to be a Silver Samurai. Like,
I might be crazy. Is that her voice?
No, I believe she was redubbed.
Okay.
I thought that watching the movie, did a little bit of research on it. I've heard that her entire performance was overdubbed.
Okay, because I totally got that watching
yeah.
the movie.
Yeah.
And I'm watching it, too, like, most of the time with all of these movies, you can be like, okay, that's that person from this comic.
Yeah.
I've read a lot of X-Men, and yeah. I was like, I don't know who that is. Like, yeah. I don't remember who that is. When she was taking apart her, like, she was pulling apart her skin from the,
yeah.
the trailer, I thought, that oh, that's skin. That's what I thought it was. But it's, she's not skin. She's right. somebody else.
Garbage villain, though.
Yeah, terrible.
And again, and the movie sets up almost to an overly complicated degree sort of these weird political conspiracies and corporate conspiracies. And I felt like it's a little overly complicated, but why they couldn't have just stuck with that or just had the big bad guy at the end be this army of ninjas that they introduced that he never gets to fight.
Yeah, like, right.
That's the whole thing, right? Isn't it Wolverine versus Ninjas, the Frank Miller, yeah. Chris Claremont book?
There's like a famous cover where he's like sitting there with a samurai sword and just like on top of a mound of ninjas.
That's how you guys remember it.
Well, this is Wolverine. That's like Wolverine number one from the reboot, right? From like early 90s.
I think that's number two.
No, it's one for sure because I had that book. It was like my favorite comic for the longest time.
Okay.
Yeah, because of that, it's just him fighting ninjas and killing people. He's just standing on a pile of bodies. So I was disappointed that didn't happen. The first two-thirds of the movie are basically played in reality. And then the last one becomes...
You go to like this weird... Yeah.
Big underground warehouse, secret lab with impossible technology and a woman who's spitting venom. And like, just make Wolverine the one superpowered thing in the movie. Yep. And then have him fight all the people, you know. So that's what made me think of a Bond movie...
No, that's funny, yeah.
As a detriment, I think, because that last act, I feel like, is out of step with the rest of the movie. But then I also thought about how he's got the boring Bond girl love, and then he's got the cool Bond girl sidekick, and then he's got the evil Bond girl as Viper or Venom. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
That there's a lot of similarities. And one of the complaints that I've read is that the love story is bullshit, that it doesn't work because that girl's performance, Mariko, is that her name?
I think,
yeah.
Mariko. That her, I don't want to have it wrong and then seem racist, that her performance is kind of limp, and I would agree with that.
Sure.
She's not great. But I never read it as them falling in love. I didn't think he was in love with her.
I never thought that.
I feel like it's very obvious that he's still in love with Jean Grey.
This is the rebound girl. The girl that he got him back where he needed to be.
Yes. That was exactly how I read it. That he's not in love with her. Right. She just gets him to a place at the end where he can... Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Is that it? I want to say that kind of stuff happened. Like, for some reason in the comic, I feel like either she or somebody else is really upset with him by the end of that storyline.
Is it? Okay, now that we're in spoilers, isn't she dead in the comic?
I want to see either... Oh my god, we're going to get tons of emails and stuff. It's been so long. I want to say, didn't she become Lady Deathstrike? I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. Anyway, all right.
I thought for sure either her or the redhead sidekick were going to bite it. And I was actually really relieved that neither one did, because in most movies... Especially when he's on the table, like, flatlining because he took his heart out. I thought for sure Redhead Sidekick was going to bite it in that, you know, protecting him. And then he's like, oh, I couldn't save her because I was dead, technically. So I was so glad that she didn't. And I'm jumping around a little bit, but I was so, you know, if a movie gets an ending right, a lot of times I'll walk away feeling so positive about
absolutely.
It. And the last shot in this movie, you have this whole movie about this badass fucking essentially immortal killer, like a killing machine, right? And the last shot we see of him is like, he's afraid to fly. And I thought that was so great.
Yes. Oh, thank God you were going that way. Because I was like, oh, is he going to shit on the last shot? Because I loved
the way that it humanizes him in that last shot. I thought was so great. I really appreciated the confidence to end the movie
absolutely
on that note.
Yes.
And I thought so many of their dialogue exchanges, especially between him and Redhead Sidekick, were so good and, like, spare.
She was great, man.
She was great. And, like, I had to deliver some exposition, but I thought they always did it in sort of a clever way that didn't spell everything out, that the dialogue was good and interesting, and that so rarely happens.
Right.
Obviously, Iron Man 3 had that because it's fucking Shane Black, but like
right.
that rarely happens in these kinds of movies anymore, so I was really appreciative of the dialogue.
Yes, I'm glad you said that because I made note of that.
Yeah.
I loved that shot.
That last shot is so great. Yeah. And then they do the stupid post-credits tag, which I thought was garbage.
It's so unnecessary.
Yeah. Who's that for? I guess it's for people who don't know that they're making Days of Future Past,
right.
But who are really familiar with X-Men The Last Stand.
Right.
Like, but I thought Charles Xavier was dead, and look, and they're all back together, and but somehow they've missed the fact that they're making Days of Future Past. I don't know.
But right. Yeah, when I was, I will say this much with the end credit, what I didn't like about it was seeing that scene, I was like, oh, their Days of Future Past is going to be nothing like the comic book.
Yeah.
Like, they just used the name Days of Future Past because comic book nerds know that.
Right.
But, like, that's completely not what it's about.
Okay.
You know, it's a complete, it's, it, in fact, in Days of Future Past, the main character is Kitty Pryde.
Which I knew, and I think they're making Wolverine the time traveler in this one, which is problematic.
Yeah, I very similarly was just thought it was a waste. And I love Ian McKellen. I love Patrick Stewart. Yeah. So I love seeing them, but I still walked away from that being like, oh, that was unnecessary. Like I wanted the last thing I saw to be that shot of them on that plane.
Yeah. Like I wish they would do away with the post credits tag, whatever,
yes.
Because they're rarely good anymore. And I felt like if they are going to do that again, because so many of us know that they're making Days of Future Past, we know that they're bringing back Charles Xavier. Like, give us one more thing that we didn't know.
Exactly.
Like, have Professor X wheel out, fine, we see that coming, but then a fucking shot of a Sentinel or something, you know what I mean? Where we'd be like, oh, what?
Yeah, I want to see a Sentinel. What
right,
do they look
exactly.
like?
So, where was I going with this? Oh, the Jean Grey thing. One of the things that I really liked in the movie was that they don't resolve that story, because he meets with her 4 or 5 times, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That they don't resolve that story with her letting him off the hook.
No, exactly.
He lets himself off the hook in a way, because he says, I had to, you were hurting people, which is such a great line. But she doesn't say, like, I understand, it's okay,
no.
I still love you. She doesn't say, I love you back to him.
No.
Nothing. She just fucking walks out pissed at him.
Exactly.
I'm alone here. And leaves.
Right, exactly. When she said, I'm alone here, yeah, like, did a fucking fist
so
bump. Right, I thought that was great.
Because you have to keep him sort of tortured as
yes.
a character. And I like
he's an immortal, and I love that aspect of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That they were definitely trying to explore aspects of that. What is it like to not get older? And I, to be honest, I thought some of the losing power stuff, which we've seen in so many other comic book movies, that they don't know how to, like, well, now what do we do with the story? I know, let's take his power away.
Yeah.
I didn't feel like it away. They kind of just lessened it.
Exactly.
So,
but to what degree? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, for what purpose?
Okay.
That's my issue with it. Is that not that they did it? Because certainly when I saw that in the trailers, I was like, really, we're going to do that old trope? But that I didn't feel like it really did much for the story that they were telling. I guess to some extent, the movie is about him embracing who he is and coming to terms with, this is what I am. And part of that is
losing,
being immortal.
Right.
Yeah. And having his healing factor. And I actually even thought that the shot, I like the way that James Mangold sort of reflects the early shot of the three generals in World War II committing harakiri.
Yeah.
Later in the movie, when Logan comes back to life after he's flatlined or whatever, and he gets the samurai sword stabbed through him, and then kills that fucking dude and says, I'm the Wolverine, which is awesome.
Yeah.
But again, not a PG-13 movie.
I'm the fucking Wolverine.
But the way that he's silhouetted with the sword through him, it's this moment of,
absolutely,
well, this is
yeah.
Logan committing harakiri and coming back to being resurrected as the Wolverine. I thought it was neat.
Yeah, yeah, very much.
So I guess if we had to lose the power sort of to get to that point, I'm more okay with it,
mm-hmm.
I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, just talking about losing powers and stuff like that, you must be happy that we're back to Bone Claws.
Oh, fucking Bone Claws. Like, my problem, too, with, and I didn't mind it, actually. I fucking hate Bone Claws. At least nobody called him James in this movie. They showed the Bone Claws in the well, or whatever he's in,
yeah.
in that World War II sequence. And I was like, oh, okay, Bone Claws. Yeah, that's in keeping with continuity, especially with what they established in that garbage last movie. And I thought that was going to be the one acknowledgement of X-Men Origins Wolverine, was like, oh, yeah, remember Bone Claws? Yeah. So I was fine with that. My problem is that they fucking brought back, they cut his claws off, which Okay, fine. And then they bring back bone claws, which I hate. And that, but the biggest sin is that when he's walking through the airport during the post-credits tag, he still fucking has bone claws. Like, do a throwaway line. Yeah, it's like, they redid the adamantium. I'm like, we melted Silver Samurai down to scrap, and I took the adamantium and put him on my bone claws again because these are fucking stupid bone claws. I don't like bone claws.
I can hear you say bone claws.
I don't like it. And I know it's in keeping with the comic book, but only recently, right? When they put out that fucking origin book.
What do you just like?
No,
more?
It actually started at one.
Actually.
Okay. I do want to know. Magneto takes away all of his adamantium in one of the issues. Like, he completely takes all of,
right,
like, his bones, his everything.
Right.
It's completely gone, and that he still has bone claws.
My understanding, though, was that claws were not his mutant power. So how does he have bone claws? My understanding was always that his mutant power was his healing factor.
Yeah.
That the claws were put in him, you know, when they made him Weapon X, that they weaponized him with claws, that he didn't naturally have bone claws that came out. So
I
when did that change?
I always kind of got that, too.
Yeah. So I don't know when that changed. I thought it was with that origin series that I didn't much care for, but
now if he threw sticky bombs with his bone claws, would you walk out?
You have the perfect storm of shitty. Yikes! I don't like it. There was something somewhere else I was going to go with this. Somebody else jump in with something from the Wolverine.
I really liked the just the scene with the love hotel. Like, okay. I thought that was, like, you know, he goes in there, he doesn't know, and then they go up there and they choose the Mars. I just thought it was, like, it was a really great way of, like, having that Bond-type comedy feel to it.
Right.
Like, it's not hitting you over the head with, like, oh, this is funny. It's like,
That was one of the things I did like about the movie, that there are moments of laughter, but it's not real fucking jokey.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Do you remember that scene? And again, not to go back to X-Men Origins Wolverine, but
I
like...
I remember X-Men Origins.
There's a scene where he's like first discovers his claws. That can't be right. I just remember he's in like the bathroom of a farmhouse, and it's all kind of played for laughs, and it's really shitty. That movie's really, really shitty.
We know.
I really don't like it. And it's interesting because you watch that, and Gavin Hood was the director, and he was sort of an indie guy, and, you know, listen, I'm rooting for him, whatever, because didn't he make Ender's Game? Doesn't he have that coming out? Is that Gavin Hood?
Is that Adam? Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
We asked one of the 75,000 people they had working for them at the San Diego Comic-Con.
Yeah. By the way, I know people love that book, and people are excited to see that turn into a movie. I have no relationship with the book. When I see that trailer, I die inside because I just feel like we only have one kind of movie now,
right,
and it's
right.
Ender's Game, or it's Hunger Games, or it's Mortal Instruments, The Lovely Bones, or it's we have one movie now, and it's all the Ender's Game represents all of it. Ender's Game, Bone Claws, that it's jokey without just that James Mangold again is sort of just this journeyman director. He doesn't have much of an artistic stamp. He just takes genres and tries to do as good a job with them as possible. But he's a pro, and so this movie is made with a lot of confidence. Like, he knows what he's doing when he shoots it. He knows what he's doing the way it's cut together. And again, the screenplay helps because Scott Frank worked on the screenplay, and Christopher McQuarrie is like uncredited on the screenplay, but he's, you know, a great writer. So it just feels confident. Even when it starts to fuck up at the end, it's like I still feel like I'm in good hands, whereas with X-Men Origins Wolverine, I just remember the whole time feeling like it was fucking flop sweat from beginning to end. Every frame of that movie felt like flop sweat to me, and it was very upsetting.
I really don't remember that. I remember...
You should watch it again.
I remember the end...
No, don't.
Just thinking...
watch it again. He meets Gambit. Will.i.am from the Black Eyed Peas.
I feel like the last 10 minutes, and maybe I'm exaggerating, but like the last 10 minutes is when all these other characters show up, and I remember thinking
it's throughout.
Okay, it is.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe it's just felt like last. I just remember thinking like they just want to sell toys.
Deadpool's in the opening, like in the prologue. He doesn't become like mute, weird Deadpool until the end when he's revealed. But like he meets Gambit like in an alley halfway through the movie, John Carter. That movie's garbage.
It's so funny.
And it's like memory bullets. Like, it's really, really shitty. And I appreciated the fact how much they did sort of take this, not out of continuity, but they didn't do all that shit where it's like, oh, we got to throw this character in and we got to have him run into so-and-so, you know, like, yeah. My name's Bishop. Like, go fuck yourselves, X-Men movies. I don't know how much of this has to do with Tom Rothman leaving. Tom Rothman used to be the studio head at Fox, and he was the devil. He was the enemy of creativity. He's the guy who basically got Matthew Vaughn to quit X-Men Last Stand. He's the guy who put X-Men Origins Wolverine into production. He left a year or two ago, so I don't know how much of this was developed while he was still there, or how much of its success can be attributed to him not being there.
Right, that's interesting.
But we are so much better for it, because this feels more like a Marvel movie than it does a Fox movie with a Marvel label at the beginning. Yes.
I can honestly say, too, that I think one of the reasons this movie's working is because they are basing it off of the comic. I mean, there's an established story
right. That
they're going from, you know? And that's what worries me about Days of Future Past, is that they're not even going to really take the template for it.
But we were talking a little bit before we started recording, because they just announced Avengers 2 is going to be called Age of Ultron, and we were saying, well, how much of Age of Ultron are they actually going to do, or are they just using the name and going with something else? And I don't think they should be remaking famous comic arcs. Like, I don't think... I'll admit that when X-2 ended and we saw that Phoenix in the water, I got as excited as everybody else.
Yeah,
like,
holy shit,
they're going to do Dark Phoenix. This is amazing. And then they kind of shit the bed with doing Dark Phoenix. I kind of wish they wouldn't feel beholden to famous comic arcs. Like, I kind of wish they weren't doing Days of Future Past. I kind of wish they're not doing Age of Ultron. Like, you can tell original stories. That's okay. You don't have to just look to, well, what stories are already written that we can make?
I think maybe, and tell me if I'm wrong, but what you're saying is... you know, we have these great... Yes, I mean, I agree with you, Patrick. But, like, we know we have these great comic book stories. And I know I was like this. Maybe you were, too. Like, I would read, you know, when I was younger, a great comic book story and just think, like, my God, this would make such a kick-ass movie. So there is... I don't know. I have some of that where, like... Yeah, like, Days of the Future Past is fucking awesome. So there's a part of me that would like to see that on the big screen.
Right.
Play out in front of me. But yes, I understand what you're saying too. Like, we also have the license to do something else.
Right.
As well.
Because Iron Man 3 just did Extremis, right? Basically.
Yeah.
No? Yeah?
I don't know.
I never read Extremis, so I don't know. But
I'm not a big Iron Man guy.
So okay. So I just worry that now that's what we're going to get when they're trying to come up with a sequel, that they're just going to look to a famous comic arc and, okay, well, let's just do that.
But at the same time, the argument I'm going to use for that is...
another one, I'm sorry.
Watchmen.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Watchmen, like, they stay fairly true to this story. They change some things at work, I think, for the better.
Yeah.
And that, I'm fine. Like, that's kind of where I'm at. I think that's where you and I will disagree on that one, is like, you have this template of a story that works, that people are a fan of.
Right.
Like, make it a little bit more Hollywood, that's fine. But, like, why do you have to... why are you going to call it Days of Future Past if it's not going to be Days of Future... Why are you going to call it Age of Ultron if Ultron's just in it?
Right.
You know? Like,
sure.
Like, either completely stray away from it or stay true to the story.
Right.
So...
And not to be stuck on this topic, but I agree with you on Watchmen, and I think, you know, that is sort of this anomaly. As a one-off, I'm okay with that. My issue would be if they continue to do it, if we're just judging something on its fidelity to the source... All we're going to get is filmed storyboards, you know what I mean? Like, movie after movie. And so it's just like, if the comic exists, I can just go read the comic. I don't have to watch the movie. I can just go read Winter Soldier. I don't have to see the movie Winter Soldier. So tell me a different Captain America story that I can't go read in a comic.
No, I totally get that. I really do.
And who knows? I mean, it does seem to be a trend right now. They may not stick with it, but they seem to be interested in sticking with it. So I don't know. I had another point that I wanted to make about the Wolverine. Oh, one of the things I like about it, whether or not this was a comic in the first place, you know, they've talked for a long time about doing this Wolverine arc and why they didn't do it instead of X-Men Origins Wolverine. I don't know, but this is sort of the most famous, like, Wolverine in Japan, right? Go. Because whether or not Mariko was a character in the book, whether or not it stays true to the events that took place in the book, it's a great setting for that character because it's this idea of him as a modern day samurai. Right. And the weird, and this was one of those things from another review that I read. I don't know which one, so I won't take credit for this, but they point out the crazy duality in Japanese culture where it's, especially at the time, you know, samurai, the life of a samurai, where it's all about certain codes and traditions, but it's also a life defined by violence. And so there's this weird duality at work, and that's essentially Wolverine as well, that he's a guy who's very conflicted because he's this crazy berserker killing machine who's also tortured about not growing older, and he killed Jean Grey, and what, you know, he's got all these things that he's conflicted about. And I really do think the movie tried to be about those things, and that's one of the things that I liked about it the most, that it tries to sort of be about the psychology of the character without being this fucking dark, brooding, like, whammy Wolverine story. A couple comic book movies lately have gone heavy on the dark and brooding, and so, including Amazing Spider-Man, so I was happy to see that I think they stayed true to the character without making a movie that was dark for the sake of being dark.
Right.
So, where do you guys rank this?
Ooh, gosh.
On the comic book scale, like on as far as comic book movies go.
I mean, I think we could rank it within the X-Men series. I don't feel like I could rank it with all comic book movies.
Where do you rank it with the X-Men movies?
I don't even know if I could do that. I feel like I need to live with it longer. And that last act bummed me out a little bit. So if they had gotten that better, it would be really high, I think.
I feel like you have a ranking, Adam.
I'd say I kind of liked it.
Better or worse than Green Lantern?
Way better than Green Lantern.
Okay, all right, okay. Good. There's our bar.
I would say it's not as good as X2.
Yeah.
I would say it might be better than the first X-Men in my book.
It might be.
Yeah, I think I liked it better than the first X-Men.
The first X-Men has a ton of problems. Honestly, I think X2 has some problems that have shown themselves with age. But, I mean, I like X2 a lot. But,
Am I the only one here that liked First Class?
Oh, I liked First Class.
I liked First Class. I don't think I liked First Class as much as the internet says I'm supposed to like First Class.
Okay. I think I like it as much as the internet.
Really?
I really like First Class.
I really like the first half of First Class.
I'm going to watch it again.
Me too.
The ending.
Patrick,
yes.
Let's have a date night.
All right.
I won't be invited again. The ending, once again, we could probably say that about a lot of these movies I had a lot of trouble with, but I think I just, Fassbender and James McAvoy.
All that stuff is great. Watched,
they're
fantastic. Yeah, all that stuff is great, and that's why I think I like the first half of the movie so much.
Yeah.
A lot of my problems with First Class have to do, again, with this prequel bullshit where it's about table setting, like, where they have to rush all these beats because it's like, well, they have to be enemies by the end of
that's
the movie.
That's how I felt, like, toward and the end. Yeah, that everything
Xavier has to lose his hair, and he has to end up in a wheelchair, and it's just like all this jokes about, like, am I going bald? Like, that kind of shit just irritates me.
I agree.
When it's just telling a story, I like it. Yeah. You know? I don't know where I would rank it, honestly. I definitely have to. It's definitely my favorite
better
Wolverine movie.
Catwoman?
Not better than Catwoman, no.
Okay, all right.
No, come on. Put it to an impossible standard. Last thing I want to point out about the movie, and I thought this was interesting, because there's only one shot in the movie. I've talked a lot on this podcast lately, and I'm sure many of you are tired of how often I've talked about this summer, where we get movie after movie of just wanton destruction, right?
I'm tired of you talking on the podcast.
For sure. Oh, yeah. I'm tired of it.
Can we just have one hosted by Doug, maybe?
Yeah. No, okay. That's fine.
All right.
It'll have a lot to do with celebrity nudity.
I'm in.
Done.
Doug, I'm in.
Claire Kramer, let's go.
Star Trek Into Darkness, World War Z, Man of Steel, just movie after movie of just everything being destroyed.
Mass destruction.
So, I thought it was very interesting that for one shot in The Wolverine, we get them coming out of the well and seeing the destruction left by the bombing of Nagasaki. And how much more that impacted me than all the other movies. And part of that is because, obviously, it's based
on something real.
But there's a genuine sense of loss and horror in the guy's face.
I was just going to say, because we see it in them.
Right.
Right.
And yet, it's particularly fucked up because America are the ones responsible. Like, right. We're the ones who did that, and here we are sympathizing with the Japanese characters, as we should, but because the movie is told largely from a Japanese perspective, that we're so much on their side that...
Yeah.
Yeah, that really registered in a summer that has turned that idea into just CGI spectacle.
Yep.
That was horrifying and tragic. And again, still, I think, ties into the theme of the movie about rebuilding oneself, you know, from nothing, whether you're talking about that character who becomes this millionaire and then eventually inside of a giant silver samurai robot, or the Wolverine character, you know, who's been torn down at the beginning of the movie because he's in hiding in Canada because of what happened to Jean Grey or whatever, and by the end of the movie, he's built himself back up again. So I think it still ties in thematically, and I think that's why they get away with including that shot, because the movie specifically goes back to that moment.
Yeah.
But I appreciated that a movie actually took time to reflect on what that means, even if it's just for a second. Maybe not everybody took that away, but I definitely did.
No, you're right. And the timing, you're right, is great that we saw that this summer after seeing
right
what we've seen leading up to the Wolverine.
Yeah.
My parents saw Man of Steel.
Yeah.
Like, my parents are, they see, like, a movie every 3 months, you know? And, like, my mom saw Man of Steel and was like, "Me, kind of got really sick of buildings falling down."
I like, don't see why.
Yeah, right? Because it's not like everything falls apart.
Yeah. Anyway, are we good? Is that it for the Wolverine?
Yeah, and I got to say, like, I know earlier in this podcast I said I don't, you know, it might be a while before I revisit it, but after this discussion, I'm actually very much looking forward to rewatching it.
Isn't it funny?
There's a lot of good stuff in it.
Yeah.
We've done several comic book ones, and the Green Lantern one,
yeah.
Remember, I came into it being like, I kind of like this movie, and by the end of it, I was like, fuck this movie with a giant, giant dildo, okay? And now...
A green
like,
dildo that you make out of a ring.
Yes, a giant, yellow evil dildo, all right?
Sinestro dildo?
Yes, Sinestro dildo. It's a name for a band, guys. Yeah. All right.
But not a Green Arrow dildo. Those on eBay.
Suck it. Okay, I have $500 in your that's what this comes down to, is you guys are jealous.
I'm the one who texted you with
you are the winner.
But now, like, we're talking about this movie, and I liked it, and now I'm like, I really liked that movie, the more we talk about it, so.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff in it, and that's, again, that's the advantage to actually talking about movies and thinking about why you do or don't like them, which I encourage all of you to do who are listening.
And usually when I talk to Patrick, I usually... I'm crying right now. I liked it. You're wrong about it.
I have the power to build movies up. Yeah. It's just that my powers to tear them down are greater.
I like Casino. It's good.
Listen, it's fine. It's fine that you like it. Oh. I
can
like
we,
it
can
too.
Can we talk about Cyborg real quick here?
I mean, great. If you
what always talk about Cyborg.
What is this?
It's a poster of Cyborg that's on my desk.
Well, I know
signed
that,
by the director.
That's awesome.
Well, listen, not everybody has a signed Cyborg poster, but it's fine. Some people have signed Evangeline Lilly children's books. So it's the world is a rainbow, you know what I'm saying?
I'd like to see him remember your children's name. I do love that he wrote, "Hope you like the director's cut." That was my favorite part of it.
Anyway, thanks for listening, everybody. We hope you had a good time, and we'll talk to you again next week.
I guess. You want to talk about San Diego some more?
Please.
Snicked.
Sayonara.
Bub.
That's kind of racist, right?
That's what he said.
I know. And when it happened, I was like, why did he have to say sayonara? That's kind of racist. He has to mock you in your own language?
He's trying to learn the language, Patrick.
It's all about Wolverine all right? trying to assimilate.
This was his first, that is what he learned from Rosetta Stone. So that's what he's just putting into practice.
Anyway, thanks for listening, everybody. Sayonara.